Welcome to the Phil Mason Show!
Phil Mason Show. That was John Fogerty, center field, on the Friday, March the 15th, 2013 edition of the Phil Mason Show. And that song signifies baseball. And coming up, Alex Hall from AthleticsNation.com will be bringing us the weekly Oakland A's report, followed by Eric Steven from True Blue LA to talk about the Los Angeles Dodgers in his weekly LA Dodgers report. But up first, from bloggingmets.com for the weekly New York Mets report is none other than Mr. Mark Berman. Mark, how are you? What's up, man?
I'm very good. Things are good. How about you?
Things are good. I'm just trying to figure out this time zone difference, you know, because you guys went forward and we don't go forward till the 31st. So it was like, okay, did I tell them 11 hours ahead of time or was it 10? So just in case I got it, you know, I got up early and it's raining here so I can sleep all day again on Friday. I'm lucky. Like you, I get to sleep all day.
Oh, yeah. I love sleep. It keeps me young somehow.
It's a beautiful – you look like you're like 25, dude.
Isn't it crazy? And I got all this hair and stuff. I shouldn't say that. I'm sorry.
That sucks. I don't even want to hear that because unfortunately all those years of wearing baseball hats, actually I think it was more like heredity, left me a patch down the middle there. So, but when I wear my hat and I let the hair grow back a little bit, I look young again. So that's okay.
There you go.
Yeah, it's all good.
If that makes you feel better, then that makes you feel better.
That's okay. The young ladies still seem to look at my way still, and that's a good thing. But there's only just one, you know. But still, in all the other ones, they kind of look, but I don't look back. Let's just put it that way.
Sure, you don't.
Never.
No. Men never look at women.
Never. But they look at us.
Of course, they're all staring at us. You know what they want.
Sure, because they're from Venus.
Yeah, we're gonna get in trouble soon.
Certainly.
Well, what about the Mets?
Yeah, I have a feeling that people are listening to this.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Mets. The Mets are, well, you know something. Are you optimistic?
No, I'm really not. I wish I were optimistic. I find myself on my blog being negative a lot, and I'm trying not to be, but it's really hard to be positive about this team. I mean, they were terrible last year. They got worse, if anything, by trading Dickey. So it's hard to be positive about the Mets.
Yeah, I'm finding myself the same way. And last year, if you remember, I was very positive about this team. This year, I just can't get fired up. Although I've watched, you know, because I get up early anyway, really early, ungodly early sometimes, I have picked up some games on the stream, and I'm still interested in watching them because that's what I do. But goodness gracious, when I look at the outfield and I look at this team, and then, you know what, we've got this issue. This is probably Johan Santana's last year with the Mets, and it looks like he's starting the season off on the disabled list. And then he's got these issues with the front office. And I just read, I guess it was in the New York Post, that he says that they've resolved things. But, well, you never really know. What's going on, you think, with Johan Santana and the Mets? Is this going to be another one of those Seaver deals?
No. I mean, like you just said, the fact is this is going to be his last year with the team, regardless of what happens. So I think the, you know, even if there are, apparently, like you said, they talked it out and everything's fine. But even if there are hard feelings, it's only going to be for this year anyway, and then he's gone. But it's disheartening. And this goes to what I was saying before, how it's really difficult to be positive because the Mets just don't do anything right. Like, there was no reason for Alderson to say what he said about Santana. Even if it was true, why say it? No good is going to come out of it. I have no idea why he said that. All he did was alienate, you know, a good player who is the most competitive guy the Mets have ever had, probably. And it just, again, did nothing positive came out of that. And there was just no reason to say it.
Yeah, but you know what? I think it's the Mets way. You and I have talked about this before. You know, the St. Louis Cardinals, they have the Cardinal way where you act a certain way, you behave a certain way, otherwise you're out. Well, the Mets way is really disparaging athletes on their way out.
It's bizarre. I mean, they did the same thing with R.A. Dickey. I mean, Dickey was not the one who was pushing for a trade. He was happy to sign with the Mets. They didn't want to sign him. They decided to trade him, which was fine. But why did they have to, you know, kick him on the way out? Tom Seaver, Cleon Jones, all these guys throughout their history, Jose Reyes, they just... It's mind-boggling to me that the decision makers change, different GMs, different owners sometimes, you know, not sometimes different owners, yet the results are the same. It's just a team that does not handle personnel changes very well for some reason.
Yeah, and you commented about that on your blog too. And
I did.
I think you're right. You know, I think there's this system there, or this I don't even know what to call it, but it just doesn't make any sense. Because Santana, he's done a lot in a Mets uniform. Okay, he didn't lead them to a World Series, but then they didn't really put a very good team behind him either.
Right, and when you know, 2008 was his first year. You know, he threw the second to the last day of the season. He pitched that incredible complete game to keep them in the race. He was, you know, he was ready to lead them to the playoffs, and then they flopped in the last game. So he's a competitor. He's done everything he could to make this team better. So to disparage someone like him is disrespectful and just nonsensical, in my opinion.
But then that's kind of like Sandy Alderson's MO since he's been there, too. I don't get it. But, you know, what I don't understand, I guess, is what's going to happen with Johan Santana? Now, he has really no incentive to want to play other than to perhaps pitch for another contract somewhere else, right?
Yeah, that's what this year is all about for him, is to show he's healthy and to show he deserves another contract, at least a one-year deal from someone. That's his motivation, because the team obviously is not going to win. So he does have reason to pitch. He's pitching for himself rather than the team, what it boils down to.
Well, he's not pitching at all.
Yeah.
How long do you think this is going to be? Because I have this bad feeling that we're not going to see him pitch until probably the All-Star break.
You think so? I would be surprised. I think he'll start the season on the disabled list. I think we'll see him late April. That's my guess.
Yeah, but I always get strange feelings about these things because they never really tell you everything. But then again, I guess they don't have to.
Right.
But it just seems weird.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting this. I mean, he, you know, pitched last year and was shut down the last 2 months. I expected him to come in ready to go. And you know what? Maybe Alderson thought he was going to be ready to go also, which is why he said what he said. I don't know.
Who knows? But if I were Johan Santana, I'd be ready to give them the middle finger salute on my way out off the mound every night I pitched.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Absolutely.
Now, normally, under these circumstances, in a healthy Johan Santana, he would be the starter on opening day. But he's publicly backed Jonathan Neese. He said, John deserves it. He's the best pitcher on the staff. And that's just the way it is. Are you comfortable calling John Neese the ace of the staff?
No. I mean, Jonathan Neese is an excellent pitcher. He's not an ace. He's a number two at best. He might end up being the ace by default, but I don't think he's a quote-unquote ace.
I don't know. I think he might be someday. I took him on my fantasy team in our first draft this week. It was good. I like him. I think he's the best pitcher that the Mets have currently.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you 100%. But I just think I would never use the word ace to describe him because I don't think he's that much of an upper echelon pitcher. And hey, there's nothing wrong with being a solid number two. I mean, Jerry Kuzman was never an ace. He was a solid number two. And if John Neese ends up to be Jerry Kuzman, that I'll take that.
And I hope Matt Harvey can become Tom Seaver.
Yeah, he could be an ace. He has ace stuff. He and Wheeler both have the potential to be aces, I think.
I'll tell you what, that Harvey kid threw pretty good the other day.
I didn't see the game, but I read about it. I know he had some troubles early, and then he settled down. But look, he's 13 innings, got 18 strikeouts already. 2.77 ERA, that's what he can do. It's great.
I think he's going to have, how do I put it? If he can win 14 games this year, I will be a very happy camper.
Absolutely. I mean, I have a feeling he'll pitch well enough to win 14, 15 games, but the bullpen's going to blow some games. The offense isn't going to score. I can see him winning 10 games, but having an ERA of like 2.7 or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Zach Wheeler, they sent him down. You know what? This is another one of those silly things. Because I remember last year you and I were talking about this very thing with Matt Harvey. And we wanted to see Harvey up there after Santana got hurt or even before he should have been up instead of picking up Chris Young. Now, what I don't get what they're thinking. They're going to send him to AAA. How long is he going to be there? Will he be there till May 1st so they don't lose a free agency?
It's all about money. I mean, he'll be there at least till the end of April because then they can push back his free agency for a year. But if they keep him down until midseason, they'll push back his arbitration for another year, which is what I think they'll do, which is what they did with Harvey last year. And if you think about it, Ike Davis, they brought him up in April 2010. And because of that, he was eligible for arbitration this year. He's making around $3 million. If the Mets had waited to bring him up in midseason, he would be making less than $1 million right now. So it's a big deal for them. So that's what I think they're going to do. It's really not fair. You want to have your best players up there when they're ready. But it's the nature of the business. And with the Mets counting every penny that they spend, there's no way they're going to bring him up any earlier unless he just pitches, unless he's 10-0 with a zero ERA or with three no hitters or something. And the Mets are just, you know, falling over themselves. But other than that, we won't see him until midseason.
I think they're going to do the same thing with that Travis kid. Do you know? I think they'll do the same with him, is wait until May 1st and bring him up. Because I don't think he's going to make the roster either, do you?
No, he definitely won't. He's going to be a late April guy. I don't think they'll be able to wait until midseason with him. I think John Buck, even though he's hitting reasonably well in spring training, he's not going to do well. And Darno is ready to go. So he's going to tear up the minor leagues the first 3 weeks, and late April they'll bring him up. That's what I think is going to happen.
Especially out there in Vegas, that ball flies.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been to many games there at Cashman Field, and that ball just flies out of there.
Yeah, I haven't been to any games there. I'm going to try to go this summer. Be cool to see the AAA team.
Yeah, it'd be hot, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the summertime is a disaster. You want to go in April, end of April or before June 1st.
That's a good point.
It is hotter than blazes. They don't play day games there. They can't. It's like 110 degrees out there.
I've been there many times in the summer. Passed out from dehydration one time. So I'm aware of how hot it is.
I did that, too. I was playing tennis, and I had forgotten my water. That's like asinine. I'm a tennis pro. I should know these things. And the wind, when the wind blows there, it's like hot, too.
Yeah.
Hot wind. And I was seeing yellow spots. I was like, what the hell? And I was just playing doubles. I was just fooling around. I was like, oh, boy. That's never a good thing. Anyway, you know something? Speaking of seeing yellow spots and being injured, what's up with David Wright? You know, he was scratched from the game against Puerto Rico, but he's been raking the daylights out of the ball, hasn't he?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to correct you, but they were playing Dominican Republic tonight.
That's what I mean. And he got scratched from the lineup.
Yeah, they first said he had a sore back, but now the later reports I'm seeing said he had sore ribs. It's a shame. I mean, personally, I was really looking forward to watching the game. I turned it on and they were like, no David Wright. And I'm like, what? So that was kind of disappointing. And they just lost, by the way, 3-1.
Darn.
So the U.S. has to play tomorrow. They're playing Puerto Rico tomorrow. And if they win, they go to the championship round.
Okay. And don't worry about correcting me. It's okay. That's why you're here. Okay. You're the expert. Okay.
Well, I don't know. Expert. You know, I'm brilliant. I don't know if I'm an expert.
You're brilliant. And by the way, brilliant disguise. People were writing to me about that. They say, hey, that sounds interesting.
Are they buying the book?
I didn't ask that.
Okay. I don't see any uptick on my Amazon. I'm still like 8 millionth book or something like that. So if the book sounds interesting to you, just buy it. I need my money.
Yes, he needs money. Yes.
I think I get $3 every time I sell a book. So
there you go. Hook him up. Come on out there. Hook him up. Hook him up. Now, you know, speaking of hooking up or hooking people up, Brennan Bosch from the Tigers, he was I'm a big Tigers fan, as you know, and he was like, damn, I think he was like the fifth vote or sixth vote away from Rookie of the Year a few years ago, and he's had some troubles, and then they brought in Torrey Hunter, and that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, sealed his fate, so to speak. He's available, and the Mets aren't interested, and they have no outfielders. What is up with these people?
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that he's not a good fielder and he's left-handed. So that's going to work against him. Because the Mets already have Lucas Duda filling both of those roles. Neuenheis is a lefty. Valdespin's a lefty. So they have a lot of lefty hitters. So that's one thing. But here's the thing. The guy's 27 years old. He hit last year 14 homers, 67 RBIs, batted 256. No, I'm sorry. His rookie year was 256, 14 homers, 67 RBIs. Last 2 years, he had 16 and 12 homers, 54 RBIs each season, batted 283 and 240. Okay, that's not spectacular, but is anyone else in the Mets outfield going to get those numbers? I don't think so. And, I mean, players are pretty consistent, so you can count on him hitting 250 with 15 homers and 60 RBIs. I mean, Colin Cowgill, who's actually playing pretty well, he's not going to do that. Marlon Byrd's not going to do that. Why not take a flyer on this guy? He's 27 years old. they can sign him for the minimum, or maybe a little above the minimum. I don't understand it. I really don't.
Nope, I don't either, and it makes no sense. But you know what you could do? You could put all the outfielders and add up all their stats together, and you still won't catch this Bosch kid.
No, not at all.
That's awful. But yeah, Duda might strike out 300 times, though.
Oh, man. Duda. He struck out, I think I just, 13 times this spring already, or something like that.
Wow. Duda day.
Yeah.
Damn.
I just saw that. 12 times this year, this spring.
Ah, the unlucky 13 he's missed, but he'll get that tomorrow probably. So.
Yeah. 233, one home run, 3 RBIs.
That's what you can count on every day when the Mets play, Duda to strike out.
Yeah. It was it's so disappointing because when he came up 2 seasons ago, he played really well. He hit close to 300, if not more than 300, and had like a dozen homers in a couple hundred at-bats. And it looked like he was going to be something, but last year was so disappointing.
Yeah, he was a disaster from start to finish. What did he finish with, 12 home runs last year?
I think it was 15.
Or 15, yeah. I had him on my fantasy team at the first part of the season because I was expecting, last year in the spring, he was cracking some moonshots. And I'm thinking to myself, good grief, if he's batting fifth or fourth and you put Davis fifth and David Wright third or switch them around somewhere, you're going to see some smacking. And Duda did jack. And then he stunk in the outfield, too. It was just like watching a circus. Every time he runs out there, I think they should play Frank Sinatra's Send in the Clowns. I'm serious. Because it's just, he doesn't even look like a ball player. I mean, he doesn't even know how to wear a hat. But
he really, he's clueless in the outfield. And he was getting worse as the season went on somehow.
And here I was. Remember I said, let's trade Ike Davis because Duda is going to be better and he can play first base? Thankfully, you ignored that, Sandy Alderson, and you didn't let it pass. But why should you? You got me flamed for weeks.
Yeah, last year at 15 homers, batted 239. In 2011, in 300 at-bats, hit 10 homers, batted 292. So, yeah, we all thought we had something with Duda in 2011. He's still the key to the whole lineup at this point, because if he's not hitting, that's just a huge hole. Because it's Wright and Davis, and that's it.
Well, Daniel Murphy's in there. I think he's still in the mix.
Yeah, but you know what? He has no power. Hopefully, he'll ten home runs out of him. Yeah, he hasn't played all spring training. Apparently, he's supposed to start playing soon, but hopefully, he can actually play and hit. I mean, yeah, if he's in, he'll hit. So I'm not worried about that.
And speaking of guys who can hit, Jordani Valdespin, he jacked one on Verlander, and then the next time he came up, he got hit in the area where we teach our little girls to kick the boys when they get stupid. How do you play baseball? How do you play Major League Baseball or any sport like that without wearing a cup?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming when he plays the infield, he wears a cup. So maybe he's figuring, I'm playing the outfield, I'll be fine. And no one's going to throw a ball there. So maybe he just thought he'd be fine. It is silly, though, for him to do that. But you know what? The guy, he's forced his way on the team. I mean, he leads the team with 3 homers. He's hitting 367. I always liked Valdespin. I was saying during the offseason that they should have traded Daniel Murphy and put Valdespin at second base. As much as I like Murphy, he was one of the only players on the team with any kind of value that could have brought back a quality outfielder. So, I'm not surprised by Valdespin that he's doing this well. He looked lost in the outfield last year, like Duda. I would rather see him at second base.
But I'm a big fan of Valdespin, as you know. And I'm glad to see all these things. And you know what? We burned up the entire segment already, dude.
We're done?
Yeah, can you believe that? Jeez.
All right.
Hopefully Jordani next week has his cup in there, finds it, and locates everything. And next week we'll be back to talk more about our beloved New York Mets. Because even though we are antagonistic and pessimistic about these New York Mets, Mark and I have been fans combined for almost, well, a lot longer than we want to name.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next, Alex Hall from Athletics Nation will be here for the weekly Oakland A's Report. And by the way, you can find Mark Berman, and I suggest you do, at bloggingmets.com. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Phil Nason Show on these amazing affiliates.
Mets Sports Channel. Ohio Sports Radio Network. Call superstation.com.
And we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from The Phil Nason Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show.
This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit PhilNason.com.
Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It is Friday, March the 15th, and up next is AthleticNations.com. One of the head writers, Mr. Alex Hall, for the weekly Oakland A's Report. Alex, what's happening? How are you this week? What's been going on?
I need regular season baseball, Phil. The spring training games aren't cutting it.
Okay, that's fair enough. But so why aren't they cutting it? Are you watching the World Baseball Classic? Because those are real games.
You know, I haven't been watching it much yet. I need to get on it because they're definitely more interesting than some of these spring training minor league blowouts.
I love baseball no matter what. See, you're spoiled where I had to learn the hard way. Here in Greece, I have to take what I can get.
That's right.
And believe me, I don't get to watch baseball as often as you guys do. So when I get it, no matter what it is, I'm just thrilled. Let me tell you something. One of the stories that kind of touched me is the Giannis Cespedes story about being reunited with his family in Miami. What happened there with that?
Yeah, so everyone is pretty aware of Giannis Cespedes and the year he had and the player he is and even the player he could become. But what a lot of fans aren't maybe aware of, and even a lot of A's fans, is just what he went through last year with his family. Because Cespedes, of course, defected from Cuba, went through the Dominican, and then came to America. And, you know, and he got here just fine. But a large chunk of his family, like 13 other people, were also leaving Cuba and were supposed to follow close behind him, but things got a little complicated for them. They ran into some issues, some questions of if they were supposed to be where they were, if there was human trafficking, if they were illegal, this or that. And so they got hung up for quite a while. And it was taking a heavy toll on Cespedes. And even I wasn't even really aware of this at the time, but I guess he was real bummed out. He wasn't talking to the media. He was kind of keeping to himself. And you could say it affected his play, but he had a fantastic season. So who knows if it did or not. But it certainly affected him on a personal level. And so just in the last couple of weeks here, his family finally made it the rest of the way to the U.S. And this includes also his mother, who was a kind of a big deal softball player in Cuba. She was on the Olympic team for them a few Olympics ago. And so he is, all reports say that he is just all excited about this. He was talking last year about how much better he would play if his family were just here and all of these complicated issues would, work themselves out and he wouldn't have to worry about all these things. Well, we'll find out now if getting his family up here and having that stress lifted might make him play even better. But hey, whether or not it makes him play better, you got to be happy for the guy. He's got his mom here. He's got the rest of his family here. And how can you not be happy about that? Great story.
It is a great story, and I can connect with it because I haven't seen a lot of my family in almost 11 years. So I understand what it's like. He's going to rake this year because I'll tell you something. If I was able to be around my family, I learned to appreciate it being away from them. And he's going to rake. I drafted him this week, the first outfielder I took in the fourth round. I took Cespedes because I think this kid is fantastic.
Fantastic. His mother being a former softball player, now Bob Melvin is joking around that, great, now he's got a second hitting coach in the U.S. because, he's got mom around now. She'll show him a thing or two.
That's possible because a fast pitch softball is difficult to hit. I played it professionally for 2 years, and I know it is not easy, especially from 46 feet. And they're throwing just as hard as the major league guys. And the ball goes up in fast pitch softball, where in baseball, the ball comes down from the pitcher's hand. So it's a lot different. But I got to tell you, there's also some other interesting things happening around Oakland A's land. I know that you're not fired up about the Cactus League, but they are 8-8. And that's pretty good as of this recording. Sure. Now, there's a shortstop battle between Nakajima and Sogard, correct?
Well, I don't know so much about Sogard being in the battle, but, you were saying that over in Greece you don't get to watch a whole lot of baseball. Well, during spring training, that's true here as well. We get to listen to a lot of baseball, but there's only a couple televised A's games throughout the spring, and one of them was this past Monday. And the A's have a couple of battles going on in the middle infield here, second base and shortstop. They have a large depth of candidates. They have the quantity. And each one of these guys individually has a lot of promise and could work out here or there in certain ways. But each one of them also might not pan out. And so you'd like to think, I got five or six guys fighting for two spots. I'll be fine. But there's always the possibility that you're still looking for help at the trade deadline. And starting with shortstop, the big question has been, are the new Japanese player, Hiro Nakajima, how well is he going to adjust to America? How well is he going to adjust to the majors? Is he going to be a good player? Is he going to be a good hitter? And, I've only gotten to see him really play this one time. I don't have much to go on, but I got to say that what we saw on Monday was just not really all that impressive. On the hitting side, there have already been reports he's having a little trouble keeping up. I guess in Japan, what he says is the pitchers have longer windups. And you think of like Hideo Nomo and Dice K, and I see what he means, these big, elaborate, long windups. And in America, they kind of come set, and before you know it, the ball's coming. And so he says he's got to adjust his timing a bit to start swinging a little bit earlier. Well, okay, yeah, maybe, but I'm looking at him on this game on Monday, and I mean, he's just kind of slashing these pitches all late on every pitch. There was one where it showed from the side on his strikeout, and he was barely even starting the swing before the catcher caught the ball. And so he's got some serious adjustments to make. This does not mean he's not going to work out. We're talking about one game in early March in spring training. He's got plenty of time to make whatever adjustments he needs. He's a 30-year-old vet. He knows what he's doing. So I'm sure he's going to get better. But you look for encouraging signs in these early spring training games, and that just really wasn't one of them. He did not look like he had a very good approach at the plate. His swing didn't look very good. I just wasn't impressed. And then in the field, I don't know how many – I only saw him make one play in the field, and it was a ball to his – it was ball up the middle, so to his left. He didn't range very well on it. I felt like a lot of guys would have gotten to it, and he didn't. But again, what do I know? We're talking about one ground ball early in spring training. The reports are that his arm isn't very strong, which I think I think that was already the report before he got here. But I mean, if you know, he's got to be able to either hit or play some defense, preferably both. But so far, he's not looking that impressive at the plate. His range isn't that great, and his arm isn't that great. So hopefully, he's going to knock some more rust off, get a little more used to the culture and the league, and you know, and improve and show us why the A's went and spent a few million on him. But we'll have to wait and see. And I won't really believe anything until I see him in the regular season. I won't take anything too seriously in spring training. But the early returns, I'm just not all that impressed.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're stuck with him because he has a major league contract. So he is going to go north with you all.
That is correct.
In April. And that is what it is. You know what? But who else is going to play shortstop if he can't?
Well, there's Jed Lowrie, the acquisition from Houston. Now, again, there's been some questions about his defense because he had some sort of leg injury, something about a nerve last year. And I guess it's maybe lingering a little bit. He hasn't fully gotten back whatever range of motion he had maybe, or I don't want, it's not the right word, range of motion. I think just range, defensive range is what I meant. And so if his defense is a little shaky and Nakajima's defense is a little shaky, suddenly you don't have a guy with real solid shortstop defense like you thought you were going to. But I have a feeling that he's going to end up taking that shortstop job because Nakajima might even be able to play second. And this is just me spitballing. This isn't anything that the team has suggested. But I don't see why Nakajima couldn't slide over to second base. If his arm is the problem, well, then you can hide it. Playing second base, you're a little closer to first base. You don't have to make as big of a throw. So maybe he slides over to second base, since the other two options there, Jamyle Weeks and Scott Sizemore, both have minor league options. They could go down to AAA while Weeks works on his hitting. Sizemore plays himself back into playing shape and gets his timing back since he's missed a full season last year with an injury. Those are both guys who haven't necessarily wowed everybody enough to grab the second base job. Heck, maybe you put Lowrie at short and slide Nakajima to second, and there, you've got them both on the roster. And now they've both got spots. I don't know that that's how it's going to play out necessarily, but that will be one possibility.
Well, I'm gonna throw a little monkey wrench in your plan. The problem with moving Nakajima over to second base is it's a different throw. You know, shortstops don't go over to second. They usually convert to third. That's why Alex Rodriguez, when he came to the Yankees, they were going to put him at second base, but he couldn't make the – it's a different thing. Everything's different. He'd have to play third base or shortstop because it's just too much to learn. It's completely different pivots, completely different arm position on the throw. He'd be better off playing third base, I think.
Right, because you got your body facing the other direction, whereas if you're on the – you're at third base, you're still on the left side of the infield, so you're at least kind of facing the same way. But, you know, last year, Cliff Pennington was the A's shortstop, and when they picked up Stephen Drew, Pennington slid over to second, and he did just fine over there. He did a great job. And he transitioned a whole lot faster than anyone thought he would. But then he was a pretty versatile guy to begin with. I don't think anyone was that surprised that he transitioned quickly. It was just a lot faster than other guys would have.
Well, do you know? I'm sorry. Do you know if Nakajima has taken any infield practice at second base?
I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
Is this where they have to do it? If they're going to do it, because they have to take him to Oakland with them. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, so there's four guys. There's Lowrie, Nakajima, Weeks, and Sizemore. And Weeks and Sizemore, again, you know, Weeks is hitting all right, but his fielding just still isn't there. Sizemore is showing things some days and struggling the other days. But again, he just missed a full season. You expect it's going to take him some time. A couple other guys that are there, as you mentioned, Eric Sogard, he's been kind of the ever-present infield depth for the last few years, always shuttling between Oakland and Sacramento, AAA. He's not a guy that's going to make the roster out of spring. He'll just be, again, one of these guys where if a couple guys get hurt, Sogard comes up and he's the backup for a while until someone comes back. But another guy who has set himself apart is named Andy Perino. And he is one of these super sub utility guys. He can play all over the infield. He's been playing a little bit in left field just to get some at bats. And he's hitting the ball like crazy. I get radio feeds and I get MLB game day, the play-by-play thing. And I swear every time I open up that game day thing, it's got Andy Perino hitting an RBI single somewhere. He's homered once or twice. He's got a bunch of extra base hits. he's just killing the ball. And Oakland's got Adam Rosales, who has been their super sub kind of utility guy the last few years. He's out of options. And if he doesn't make the team out of spring, they might have to release him and another team could pick him up. Andy Perino is being billed as the Adam Rosales clone. He does all the same kind of stuff that Rosales does. And so he's a guy that could end up seeing some time in Oakland this year just because he can do everything. He can fill in anywhere. He's that perfect injury replacement. And so far he's showing maybe he can hit a little bit. Again, it's just spring training, and he's playing toward the ends of the games when all of the garbage minor league pitchers are in there. But hey, it's better than not hitting, right? So Andy Perino is another name. He won't make the opening day roster, but I bet you'll see him in Oakland sometime this year.
Awesome stuff this week, Alex. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Phil.
You can find Alex at athleticsnation.com. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Phil Nason Show on these amazing affiliates. And we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from The Phil Nason Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show. This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com. Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It's Friday, March the 15th, 2013. And on the line with me from spring training from the Cactus League is TrueBlueLA.com's Eric Steven for the weekly Los Angeles Dodger Report. Eric, what's happening, man? How are you down there?
Doing well, Phil. Always my pleasure to join you.
Hey, you know what? People write to me and they say, hey, man, it sounds like he's in the locker room. And I say, he's darn close.
That's right.
They say, because Eric doesn't usually sound like that. It's so quiet in the background. I said, well, he's in spring training. And my friend said, you have to make sure you tell people that then. He's down there in spring training. What's going on? Big news down there is Zach Greinke, right?
Yeah, got a little bit of a scare in camp this week because the Dodgers, $147 million man, had a bit of elbow soreness and wasn't quite sure where it was coming from. About a week and a half ago, he skipped a bullpen session because of the elbow soreness, but didn't think much of it. He actually got skipped from his start because of the flu. After that, he had an MRI, and they didn't show any major damage, so that was sort of a relief. But then he felt it over the weekend again, the elbow soreness again, so he was scratched again on Monday. and they flew him out to Los Angeles to meet with a team physician, and that's, it's never a good thing. I mean, I think they're being extremely cautious, but they're sort of on pins and needles. What they found was that he has inflammation in his right elbow, but they know it's nothing serious, but they're just waiting to see if he could pitch with it. So the problem with it is he was not really built up yet on an innings count. Like, his next start was going to be about, say, four innings and or 60 pitches. So he's sort of running out of starts to build up that arm strength, and he's picking up a ball for the first time on Friday, and he's not going to be able to throw a bullpen session until mid next week at the earliest. So he at most has two Cactus League starts left. So it's a very real possibility that he's not going to be ready for opening day. Don Mattingly, the manager, said on Thursday that they've been exploring different options. He might start the season on the DL. They don't technically have to use a fifth starter until April 13th, which is their 11th game of the year. So they have a little bit of flexibility there. So I think if they want to take some time with Zach, they will. But it was when you pay $147 million for a guy, you don't want him to be sort of broken before you even take him out of the box.
This sounds more serious than they let on, doesn't it?
Well, a part of it does, but part of it's, kind of weird. The weird thing is no one's really saying much outside of these little reports we get from the team. Zach's not really talking about it too much. Mattingly's not really expanding. They did say doesn't look like anything major or structural in his elbow. No ligament stuff, no tendons. So that's a good thing, but as long as it's still there and lingering, it's a problem. So that's sort of troubling.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, but yeah, $147 million in the guy. Well, we hope he can pitch for the Dodgers' sake, anyhow. Someone else who the Dodgers picked up last year from the New York Mets, actually, who had pitched for the New York Mets, Chris Capuano. His start earlier in the week, he pitched really well, and then you tell me offline that he didn't do so hot. What's going on with Chris Capuano?
He's been just a little up and down. He faced the Cubs again today. It's like the second time they've sort of hit him around a little bit this spring. I guess today the issue was they were saying it was more command. Chris Capuano was hitting the middle of the plate a little too often, and he gave up a double and a triple. And I know so far this spring, like his ERA, you can't really pay attention that much to results, but his ERA is over 10. He's given up four home runs. So he's missing a little too often than they would like. He has had some good outings too. So I don't know. Sometimes they're working on stuff. Sometimes they're trying to fine tune, but he did not look too good today.
What's the future look like for him? Is he going to make the club?
Well, that's where the Greinke thing sort of comes in. It looks like, from the looks of things, they're probably going to keep six of the eight starters. And the problem with that is I think Capuano, Ted Lilly, and Aaron Harang would be the normal odd man out of the three of the eight who wouldn't be in the starting rotation. They're going to keep one of those guys for the bullpen. And I think of those three, Capuano is probably the best fit for the bullpen, but he's also the most attractive to trade. So since they are going to probably get rid of two, they would want to get the most back for them. So if Capuano is not going to be starting for the Dodgers, then I would imagine he's a trade candidate. Possibility of him still landing in the bullpen, but we'll see.
Now Ted Lilly's throwing again. What's his status?
He's been kind of Mr. Bad Luck this spring. He's actually been throwing okay. He gave up a late sort of three-run double the other night, but the catchers and Don Mattingly and Rick Honeycutt, the pitching coach, have been sort of praising. They say the ball's coming out of his hand well, and he's doing sort of everything right. The problem has just been getting on the mound. He missed a bullpen session today because he was sick. It's the second time this spring that's happened. He actually missed a start because he was sick a couple weeks ago. And then last Friday, his start was sort of rained out. So his scheduled start, he only pitched about an inning and then a little bit in the bullpen after. So he hasn't been able to build up innings at all. He pitched just under three innings his last time out. He's supposed to go again on Sunday. He still might be able to make that start. But he's been, sort of pitching okay. But it's been a hard struggle for him to get on the mound. So I think he of the, if I had to guess, I would say he would, he's going to probably stick around and be the one of the guys in the bullpen.
Yeah, he seems to be, how do I put it, more of a fan favorite than Capuano, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's hard to gauge that, really. I mean, I think, that's a tough call. I don't even know if they register as much. They're probably close to even in that regard.
All right, let's move over to Juan Uribe, because I don't remember where I saw this, but yesterday when I was reading a little Dodgers stuff, it seems that I know he's making a lot of money, $7 million a year, and he's probably not even going to make the starting lineup. What is the deal with him? I've heard people are saying he's probably going to get traded. What's his status? What are you hearing about him, and how's he doing this spring?
The numbers aren't exactly there offensively. They've been playing him all over in the infield, all four positions. He's been playing well defensively. He's been Don Mattingly today actually brought him up and said he's been hitting the ball hard. He's trying to go up the middle into right field a little more, and he's been seeing a few results, but nothing major. He homered last Sunday, so that was sort of a good thing, and he doubled today, I believe. So he's showing a little bit of signs of progress, but I think with him, he's been so bad the last 2 years offensively that he is making $7 million this year. And if they do, you know, if they were able to find a taker, they would dump him in a heartbeat. But so I think if they're able to, what's going to happen is the Dodgers are going to end up paying that $7 million no matter what, whether he makes the team or not. And either they dump him or they try to keep him around and see if they can get sort of strike lightning in a bottle with him.
Yeah, but that's a lot of money, man. That is a bad contract, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so weird because you think that kind of a contract can kind of cripple teams at times, but then the Dodgers have so many guys now making more than that, that it's so crazy to think that his $7 million is like an afterthought. But they're going to have an opening day payroll of like north of $230 million, so it's pretty crazy.
It's like rookie pay, right?
That's right, exactly. He's going to carry everyone's bags.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, $7 million, you're the low man on the totem pole. Now, the World Baseball Classic is happening, and Hanley Ramirez had a good couple at-bats today. What is the situation down there? How is it for you? Because now you're seeing some guys that probably you wouldn't see a whole lot of at this point of spring training. Who stands out to you so far?
It's been sort of unique. Like part of it was Adrian Gonzalez was gone and Luis Cruz was gone, so their starting first and third basemen were gone for a little while. They're back now, but they got some more time for, like I mentioned, Juan Uribe at first and Jerry Hairston at first, and they mixed over both of those guys actually a third as well. But it gives them a couple non-roster guys like Alfredo Amezaga, who sort of plays everywhere, infield and outfield. He still has like an outside shot of making the team, and he's sort of taking advantage of the extra playing time. They at short, it's been a lot of D. Gordon. He's not going to make the team, barring like just a massive injury rash here in the last few weeks. But he's actually shown some strides of improvement, and they played him a ton at short in the absence of Hanley Ramirez. So he's kind of taking advantage of that and getting. Getting sort of back in the good graces of things.
Jerry Hairston's like a fantasy player's dream. He played six positions last year. How is he doing this year offensively?
Yeah, amazingly, he was one of the guys I thought would have had the biggest health question coming into the year because he had hip surgery that usually takes quite a long time to recover. But he came into camp fully healthy. He looks great. He started out the last year really hot, and then he did develop that hip injury that sort of gave him a second half decline before his season was shut down. But he looks good. I think he's going to be very valuable. He's going to see some time in left field, especially if Carl Crawford can't make the opening day roster. And you're going to see Hairston in left, at third base, maybe a little in right, maybe a little at first as a backup now and then. But yeah, he's going to play all over, and he's going to be one of those sort of unsung heroes that, you know, most winning teams have.
Okay, last question, because I know you have to go. We got about a minute left. Carl Crawford, what is his status right now?
So today was the first time he actually threw in over 2 weeks. They've been easing him back in. He's been gradually swinging, taking more swings every day. for the last week. And today he actually played in a minor league exhibition game where I love when the players go down on the minor league side because they can manipulate the rules. Like, he literally batted every half inning today. He batted for both teams because it was a minor league exhibition game. He was literally there just to get at bats. So he batted six times, and I think he got like three hits. But that was his first time facing live pitching since they shut him down on March 1st. So it's a positive signing. He hasn't had any problems in his left arm since coming back from getting shut down. And after he hit today, he threw. So that's they're reintroducing that sort of aspect into it. And I think they're still sort of easing him back. So we're he's still on track to sort of come back. I don't think it's going to be ready just in time for opening day, but probably sometime in April we'll see him.
Awesome stuff today, Eric. Thank you so much. Enjoy the week, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Phil. I'll see you then.
All right. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Mason Show. And by the way, you can find Eric Steven at TrueBlueLA.com. And I suggest you do. As long as you're there, check out his podcast called True Blue LA Podcast. Coming up on Monday, we'll be doing our National League West preview. David Whitlock and I, and we'll be talking about the Dodgers, and we'll hope to get some good feedback from the True Blue LA crowd. On Tuesday, we will be doing fantasy baseball with Nick Falk from RotoWire. Wednesday, fantasy basketball with Andy Flint, and a whole bunch more. Until then, you all take care of yourselves. Be good. Have a great weekend. And most importantly, thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.